Chapter 5. Action Research. The Doing Phase. Chapter 5, Part A. A major land-grant university received federal funding to promote education among public health employees in a southern state. As soon as the monies were awarded, several educational initiatives began to serve multiple stakeholders across the state. One of the projects that James, the grant's principal investigator, wanted to initiate was a leadership academy for mid-level managers with potential to advance to higher levels of public health leadership in the state. Previous analyses of the organization, including succession planning, had revealed a long-term need to provide leadership development. This need lingered for many years because public funding was not available to provide a comprehensive program. The grant finally created the opportunity to deliver this much-needed program. James contacted an external consultant, Leah, to help plan the program. Leah was a good choice for a consultant. She was an expert in leadership and program development. A contracting meeting was set up at which Leah and James determined the scope of the project, a one-year leadership development academy for the state's top 25 leaders. The project had two objectives. Number one, pilot a program that will become a permanent leadership development academy available to high-potential leaders on an annual basis. And number two, strengthen the leadership competencies and culture within the state public health workforce. Although Leah would be the lead consultant and facilitator for the project's planning and implementation over the first 2 years, the goal was to build capacity within the state so that internal facilitators could sustain the program over the long term. The project required an action research approach to collect and analyze initial data about the target population's needs, so the decision was made to conduct interviews and surveys to determine the content of the Leadership Development Academy. Based on Leah's expertise in leadership development, her role was defined as part expert, part collaborative partner with James and his university. The project had a 2-year implementation timeline, with the first year focused on planning and the second year devoted to implementation. Evaluation would be ongoing and continue past the second year, as a new cohort was started in year 3, staffed by internal consultants. James and Leah met regularly to plan the program. This involved undertaking the planning or discovery phase of action research, diagnosing the issue, gathering data on the issue, sharing feedback, presenting the data analysis, and planning to act. The doing phase of the action research process is the phase in which the intervention is implemented. For the Public Health Leadership Academy, this phase began in September with 25 participants who had been competitively selected from across the state. The participants convened at a resort, and the program was kicked off by high-level state public health officials. The first session lasted 3 days. During this time, the participants received results of a leadership styles inventory, listened to innovative lectures and panels on leadership, planned an individual leadership project in their districts, and engaged with each other to develop working relationships. The Academy met monthly for a year and focused on a range of topics related to leadership that were prioritized based on prior data collection. The grant provided for an evaluator, so formative data was collected at each meeting. The kickoff of the Leadership Academy set the stage for the entire year. The beginning set the tone and expectations for what the participants could expect. Pythagoras is credited with saying, "The beginning is half the whole," as cited in Info Please, ND, paragraph 1, which inspired the modern idiom, "Well begun is half done." This philosophy is well applied to creating OD interventions. That is, effective planning is key to successful change implementation. Chapter 4 introduced the first phase of the action research model, planning or discovery. This chapter focuses on the second phase, doing or action. Action research takes a data-based approach to diagnosing organization problems so that interventions can be implemented to permanently solve problems. We will return to the Public Health Leadership Academy vignette throughout the chapter to illustrate the action phase. See Table 5.1 in your ebook to review the action research model we are following in this book. This chapter will pick up at Step 4 of the planning phase, planning action to address the issue. Planning action involves choosing and initiating interventions. Interventions represent the action taken to resolve the problem. so they link the action research model's planning and doing phases. A key activity in step 4, however, is to assess the organization's readiness for change. Section 5.1, Readiness for Change. Once you have worked with a client to plan for how the organization will address the problem, you move into the implementation phase. Ultimately, the measure of effective OD is whether a change was made and if it stuck. Implementing change is easier than sustaining it. Most people have successfully dieted and lost weight. The hard part is maintaining the weight loss and sustaining new behaviors over the long term. Similarly, organizations may successfully implement a new leadership development program, but have difficulty in sustaining the necessary behavioral and cultural changes that ensure improved leadership. Making change is not the same as sustaining change. The latter is much more difficult. That is why OD consultants must help the client develop strategies to ensure people are accountable to maintain the change and create measures to help the organization sustain the change. Effectively initiating change depends on the organization's perception that the change is necessary and achievable, and that employees are willing to support change efforts. Credit McKay, Kuntz, and Noswall, 2013. These variables signal readiness for change. Our understanding of change readiness emerged from the fields of health psychology and medical studies, and was later applied to organizations. Who invented that? The trans-theoretical model of health behavior change. Models of change readiness originated in healthcare. The trans-theoretical model is considered the most influential and was proposed by Prochaska and DiClemente in 1983 based on their research on smoking cessation. A description of the model's 6 stages follows. 1. Pre-contemplation. Not ready. A state in which people are unaware their behavior is problematic. Thus, there is no intention to take action. For example, suppose Jacob is a manager with an ineffective leadership style. Jacob is doing what he observed other managers doing and does not give his performance any thought. 2. Contemplation. Getting ready. A state in which people begin to notice their behavior is problematic and begin to weigh the pros and cons of their continued actions. Lewin would refer to this as unfreezing, or readiness for change. For example, Jacob may start to notice that he is not getting the results he would like in his role as a manager. He can see that people do not listen to him, and he starts to ponder whether he should change his behavior. 3, preparation, ready. A state in which people set intentions to take action on the problem behavior in the immediate future. For example, Jacob may decide to start exploring different leadership approaches and resources for improving, such as reading, taking a class, or seeking mentoring from managers whose behavior he wants to emulate. 4, action, doing. A state in which people are engaged in making visible modifications to their behavior, usually by replacing the problematic behavior with a new, more productive behavior. This would be known as moving, in Lewin's terms. For example, Jacob may decide to seek a mentor, read some books, and take a leadership class. He may also begin to implement some new behaviors with his staff. 5, maintenance, maintaining. A state of preservation in which people have been able to sustain the change for a time and are working to prevent relapse to the former problematic behavior. For example, Jacob may work to avoid slipping back to less effective management behaviors, such as failing to consult employees on important decisions. He may also seek feedback and support from his mentor. 6, termination, ending. A state in which the new behavior has become permanent. This would be known as refreezing, in Lewin's terms, and people are not tempted to revert to their old problematic behaviors. By this point, Jacob has integrated the more participative leadership style into his repertoire and does not even think about it anymore. It has become a natural part of his being. He may now be ready to help others make similar changes. Reflect on an organization change you recently experienced. Perhaps there was a transformation in financial systems requiring employees to adopt new procedures for reporting travel or making expenditures. Other changes might include adjusting to a new CEO or president, learning new features and products or services provided to customers, or abiding by additional expectations for completing work. Most often, people are neither pleased about nor ready for changes they are asked to make. Changes are often met with skepticism, resistance, and even anger. There are several dimensions to preparing an organization for change, and readiness for change is important for practitioners of OD to consider at individual, group, and organization levels. Dimensions of change readiness. When a change is sprung on an individual or organization, a range of reactions occurs. Perhaps there is a sense of surprise, dismay, anger, excitement, fear, or dread. How people and organizations respond to a change can be measured by how ready they are to make a change, whether planned or unplanned. Dimensions of change readiness involve gauging readiness and understanding the dynamics of change. When you have been faced with change, what was your reaction? Gauging change readiness. Five dimensions influence the level of readiness to make changes. Credit Horde and Rusin, 2013. The first is whether data exists that justifies the change in a way that is relevant and compelling to the organization. That the data exists is not enough. It must be communicated clearly and compellingly by management. Next, employees must be engaged in ways that promote their input and ownership of the change. The third dimension is to ensure that the scope and impact of the change is appropriate for the organization's culture and strategy. Next, the structure of the change should be clearly defined in terms of new roles, procedures, and resources. Finally, the organization needs to prepare to let go of past practices and find a reasonable timeline and process for incorporating the change. Table 5.2 in your ebook offers a checklist of these dimensions, with examples of each category. It can be used to gauge an organization's change readiness. Chung, Judge, and Holbeach in 2015 offered tools to map change readiness of various stakeholder groups by charting readiness according to level of commitment to change and ability to make it happen. Table 5.3 in your ebook presents their process. Consider a change you experienced in the past or are currently facing. Using Table 5.3, plot your commitment to change and ability to make change happen. Next, plot your view of other key stakeholders or groups involved in the change. What issues in change readiness do you see in yourself or others, and how might you address them? Dynamics of change. Readiness to change usually indicates a willingness to entertain new ways of thinking and doing. Horde and Rusin in 2013 outlined the change dynamics in the following manner. Number one, all change is based on learning and improvement is based on change. Credit, page 2. Most change depends on learning. Horde and Rusin valued learning for the ways in which it enables people to abandon non-productive behaviors and replace them with behaviors more supportive of the intervention. They emphasized, at the center of all successful implementation of a change is the opportunity for adults to come together and learn. Page 2. Number 2, implementing change has greater success when it is guided through social interaction. Page 3. OD's collaborative, collective ethic lends itself to building communities of change that band together to implement new programs and solutions. Number 3. Individuals have to change before organizations can change. If a group or team is to successfully pull off major changes, individuals need to possess the skills and capacities to execute the necessary behaviors. Key to facilitating individual change is giving individuals choice and opportunities to influence the process and their environment. The Stages of Concern model discussed in Chapter 2 provides a framework for helping individuals address concerns related to change. Number 4. Change has an effect on the emotional and behavioral dimensions of humans. Credit Horde and Rusin, 2013, page 3. Change is stressful. When we fail to respect and tend to the emotional reactions to change, the change will likely fail. People need opportunities to air their hopes and fears about a change. This helps them feel safe during and after the process. Number 5, employees will more readily accept change when they understand how the intervention will enhance their work. This belief ties into adults' need for learning to be timely, relevant, and linked to their experience. It also relates to the power of connecting individual and organization goals. And number 6, the client and/or leader's role is to engage employees in dialogue about the changes as a way of promoting communication and ownership of the change. The more the change is talked about and explained, the easier it will be for employees to embrace. Factors influencing readiness to change. The client and the consultant can take steps to prepare the organization for change. The first is to clearly communicate the discrepancy between the status quo and the desired state. In Chapter 4, this discrepancy was defined as a performance gap. Employees will be prepared to change when they understand why the change matters. Credit Madsen, Miller, and John, 2005. The second step is to bolster employees' confidence that they possess the knowledge, skills, and abilities to deal with the performance gap and make the changes necessary to close it. Employees will accept change when they perceive a match between their skills and abilities and those needed to diminish the performance gap. Credit Treem, 2006. Perceived appropriateness of the change. Readiness to change depends on several additional variables to be in place if it is to succeed. When employees view the change as appropriate to the organization, they will generally support and readily embrace it. Credit Holt, Armanakis, Field, and Harris, 2007. For example, several years ago, most organizations did not recycle. The idea of sustainability was unfamiliar to both companies and communities. As global awareness of pollution and environmentalism has increased, so has the willingness to change our behavior. Today, it is common to have recycling bins throughout an organization. You may even have one in your office and at home. Recycling is now embraced because we view it as appropriate and necessary. Of course, even the most appropriate change must be communicated well and visibly supported by management. Creating a shared vision of the change. When management engages employees in planning for the future, they are working to create a shared vision. Credit Horde and Roussin, 2013. A shared vision is the creation and articulation of the organization's desired future state that is mutually agreed upon with employees. As discussed in Chapter 4, a shared vision may be attained by completing a gap analysis that identifies the discrepancy between the current state and the desired state. For example, when the University of Georgia decided to change its platform for online learning, it involved several stakeholders, including students and faculty, in evaluating new platforms and providing input in the final decision. By creating a shared vision for what the university desired in terms of technology, image, and learning experience, the OD intervention significantly increased buy-in when the new platform was implemented. The more management can involve affected employees in the change's planning and implementation, the more the entire organization will support the change. Level of managerial support of the change. When management visibly advocates for and adopts a change, it sends a message to the organization about the change's necessity and importance. Credit Holt et al., 2007. Management serves as a model to employees, who watch to see whether managers actually commit to the change. For example, suppose an organization attempts to create a more diverse and inclusive culture. Managerial support might include articulating the organization's commitment to diversity and inclusion at every opportunity, promoting a diverse range of employees to key positions, hiring for diversity, and rewarding behaviors that support diversity and inclusion. Providing the necessary resources, support, and assistance. Displaying managerial support goes beyond setting an example. It also involves making sure the necessary resources are provided to make the change. Credit Horde and Roussin, 2013. Changing usually takes time, costs money, and diverts energy from other activities. Creating a realistic budget and providing resources up front helps ease the transition. Employees may need moral support or training. The organization may need additional resources, or the community may need to be informed of the changes. It benefits the organization to provide sustained assistance as needed during implementation. For example, the university that changed its online learning platform had to develop a strategy for communicating to faculty, staff, and students, train for the implementation, obtain the ongoing support of faculty and students working within the platform, and hire staff to support the logistics of working with the new technology. Thakur and Srivastava surveyed 276 middle managers in India about change readiness and found that it influences resistance to change. Credit 2018. Readiness increases and resistance decreases when levels of trust, perceived organization support, and emotional attachment are high. They also found the human touch to be important, that is, fostering communication, trust, and security for employees experiencing change. Other researchers found that perceived organization support affected individual change readiness among 154 employees of a chain restaurant that introduced new leadership and restructuring, and that providing support prior to the introduction of change improved trust and readiness. Credit Gigliotti, Vardaman, Marshall, and Gonzalez, 2019. Level of organization members' self-efficacy for adopting the change. The perception that employees are skilled and competent enough to successfully implement a change bolsters readiness for it. Credit Holt et al., 2007. Helping employees become comfortable with both the content and the process of the change is important. Change content is the focus of the change. For example, adopting a new electronic medical record, or EMR program. Change process is the way the change is implemented. For example, piloting the EMR in a small department and seeking user feedback before rolling it out organization-wide. Researchers investigating individual and group openness to change in relation to primary healthcare employees' ability to improve their use of information and communication technologies in Sweden found that openness to both the change content and the process positively predicted competence with adoption of the change. Credit Augustson, Richter, Hassan, and von Thiel Schwarz, 2017. It is often up to the OD consultant and management to show employees that they have the self-efficacy to adopt the change. For example, if an organization were implementing a new technology, it would be helpful to provide opportunities for employees to experiment with it. Doing so would allow them to discover that they have the skills to implement it. Investing in professional development and professional learning is a key way to build self-efficacy. Credit Horde and Roussin, 2013. Implementing and sustaining change requires acquiring new knowledge, skills, and abilities. Such learning may boost employees' confidence that they can adopt the new changes, as well as enhance their understanding and acceptance of the change. Level of organization members' personal attachment to the change. Change is more likely to be accepted if management can show that adopting it will positively affect individual employees. Credit Holt et al., 2007. Helping employees connect their personal goals to company goals creates a winning combination. Authors surveyed 1,833 nurses in 23 acute care hospitals across Switzerland and concluded that quality of care and supportive leadership were positively associated with readiness. Credit Sharma et al., 2018. Connecting employees' personal attachment to change requires communication and support of employee interests. For example, in a quest to become a learning organization that readily captures and shares information and knowledge, an organization might bolster support of individual learning efforts by funding them, providing in-house learning opportunities, or sponsoring degree attainment and continuing education. Including a system for checking and assessing progress. The change implementation should be evaluated throughout the action research process. Credit Horde and Roussin, 2013. As Chapter 6 will discuss, to ensure the intended outcomes are being achieved, it is important to assess progress and results during and after implementation. For example, in the case of the university that implemented a new online learning platform, a small pilot group of faculty users was designated early adopters. The group received training and used the new platform the semester before it was officially implemented. This small, contained implementation offered the opportunity to troubleshoot and eliminate bugs prior to the large-scale implementation. Promoting acceptance of interventions. There are several ways the client and consultant can prepare the organization for change and bolster acceptance of the interventions. Acceptance is encouraged via effective and ongoing communication with employees about the change and by creating opportunities to participate in its planning and implementation. Developing a change communication strategy. Management communication about the change is key during both the planning and the implementation phases. Communication not only informs and engages employees about the change, but also helps diminish resistance to it. Effective communication comes in many forms. Management should take advantage of as many as possible by using media, meetings, and face-to-face interactions. Communicating about the change has several benefits. First, communication can serve an educational function. It helps employees learn about the performance gap and understand how they can help reduce it. Employees also need to learn about the change's purpose and value to understand how they can contribute to achieving it. Additionally, communication helps alleviate fears about how the change might negatively affect the organization, certain jobs, or individuals. Effective communication will bolster employees' confidence that they can cope with the change and the new demands it will bring. Credit Meyer, Davis, and Shurman, 1995, McKay et al., 2013, Willinga, 2008. More broadly, a comprehensive communication plan gives employees the opportunity to understand the scope and strategy behind the change and to raise issues of concern. Credit McKay et al., 2013. Promoting employee participation in the change. Participative management has been advocated as an effective strategy throughout this book. Engaging employees in planning and implementing change will likely result in higher levels of acceptance and understanding. Credit Holt et al., 2007. Involving employees may also benefit the change itself, because employees may have insight and information that can inform change-related decision-making and problem-solving. Credit Korpassen, Daney, and Clegg, 2012. Promoting active participation might involve educating employees about the change and inviting their critical analysis of its purposes and procedures. It is also wise to engage employees in learning and development activities that will build their competence and ability to cope with the change and whatever new tasks and responsibilities it requires. Engaged participation gives employees a sense of ownership and responsibility toward the change. When employees participate in the change process, they are less likely to resist the change. Section 5.2. What are OD interventions? During the planning or discovery phase of action research, the OD consultant works with the client to collect, analyze, review, and present data to help diagnose the problem. Once those steps are completed, an informed action to address the problem, also known as an intervention, can be selected. OD interventions are sets of structured activities in which selected organizational units, target groups, or individuals engage in a task or a sequence of tasks with the goals of organizational improvement and individual development. Credit French and Bell, 1999, page 145. Burke and Newmare defined an intervention as some specified activity, some event or planned sequence of events that occurs as a result of diagnosis and feedback. Credit 2015, page 185. Chung Judge and Holbeach in 2015 offered a composite definition of intervention drawing on multiple definitions. They concluded that interventions have the following elements: entrance into an existing system, use of a structured and planned activity, focus on a person, group, intergroups, or an entire organization, seeking to disturb the status quo and shift the system toward a new state, and aiming to improve and develop the organization. OD interventions might consist of one-time events that happen within a short time frame, such as announcing a new leader, or long-term events that may have several shorter interventions, such as mergers and acquisitions that bring new team members, additional products and services, layoffs, cultural clashes, and so forth. Interventions are fluid and can occur throughout the OD process. Defining an intervention. Interventions signify the point at which action is taken on an issue. Schein, writing about the consulting role, asserted in 2011, "Everything you say or do is an intervention that determines the future of the relationship." Page 151. Schein's view underscores that interventions can happen throughout the action research cycle. Schein later explained in 2013, "Once we have made some kind of judgment, we act." Page 94. As noted in Chapter 3, even the mere presence of a consultant is considered to be an intervention. According to French and Bell, "The OD practitioner, a professional versed in the theory and practice of OD, brings four sets of attributes to the organizational setting: a set of values, a set of assumptions about people, organizations, and interpersonal relationships, a set of goals for the practitioner and the organization and its members, and a set of structured activities that are the means for achieving the values, assumptions, and goals. These activities are what we mean by the word interventions." Credit 1999, pages 145 through 146. Interventions have certain characteristics of creating disruption, interacting with the existing organization system, and requiring careful planning. Each of these features is discussed in the following sections. Interventions disrupt the status quo. Coughlin and Brannick viewed intervening as the point at which the actual change process begins. This is where the organization may be caught in transition from a present defective state to a future desired state, managing its performance gap. In a similar vein, French and Bell suggested that interventions purposely disrupt the status quo toward a more effective state of affairs. This process is similar to identifying and resolving a performance gap. That is, the current state is incongruent with the desired state, and thus actions are required to resolve the gap. Coughlin and Brannick recognized two managerial marks of being in this disruptive transition. Number one, possessing a plan that describes the goals, activities, projects, and experiments that will move the organization to the desired state. And number two, a plan of commitment to the change by the organization. In the case of the Leadership Academy vignette, Leah and James defined a plan for the academy to develop leaders' capacity on the individual, group, and organization levels. They also secured the organization's commitment to the intervention. Intervention happens in complex systems. Interventions do not happen in a vacuum. To intervene is to enter into an ongoing system of relationship to come between or among persons, groups, or objects for the purpose of helping them. Credit Argyris, 2000, page 117. Anderson deconstructed this definition in 2016 to emphasize three points. Number one, the system is ongoing, which suggests that an intervention represents an interruption or disruption to the flow of organization life. The intervention happens in the midst of organization complexities, such as politics, priorities, interpersonal relationships, constraints, history, and other factors. Number two, interventions come between or among persons, groups, or objects, which alludes to how they disrupt usual ways of doing business. As a result, members may resist them. And number three, for the purpose of helping, indicates that the goal of intervening is to positively influence organization functioning, effectiveness, and performance. If we consider the Leadership Academy intervention, in Argyris's terms, it disrupted the flow of organization life by identifying people with leadership potential. James and Leah also had to navigate politics that evolved within the state public health agency related to the program and its control in the initial planning stages. The Academy also came between and among persons, groups, or objects by changing the way participants behaved, problem-solved, and coached their employees. In some cases, participants completely overhauled their leadership style and began developing their own teams in new ways. Some participants experienced receptivity to their new skills, whereas others encountered resistance. On the third point, the individuals, their teams, and the statewide public health agency were positively affected due to the multiple changes that occurred as a result of this program. Interventions require careful planning and sequencing. Interventions entail planning the action or intervention, as well as executing these. An intervention strategy is a series of events that take place over several weeks or months to address the problem. French and Bell in 1999 referred to an intervention strategy as a sequence of tasks. In contrast, a single event, meeting, or workshop is known as an intervention activity or task. The Leadership Academy vignette was an example of an intervention strategy, given its year-long implementation and multiple associated activities. Interventions share common attributes in that they signify a shift away from the status quo toward a new future, initiate action on the problem, rely on evidence, are grounded in relationship, occur in complex social systems, and require planning and sequencing. The Leadership Academy vignette met these attributes. It shifted the culture toward leadership and gave participants the tools and support to try their new knowledge within their work environments. The program was based on data collected from participants and the organization, as well as the best evidence available on effective leadership. Each participant's organization had to provide a letter of support to show commitment to the Academy participant, and there were multiple relationships developed during the program that were critical to its success. Classifying interventions. Interventions are generally decided during the discovery or planning that occurs in the first phase of the action research model. They are implemented in phase 2, doing or action, and assessed in phase 3, checking or evaluating. OD interventions are the point of OD. They represent the actions taken on the problem or issue. Intervention is the peak of the OD process. It is what OD intends to do from the start. That said, interventions may occur at any point in the action research cycle and are best understood as fluid. For example, a consultant's presence represents several opportunities to acknowledge a problem, make an impending change, or alter conditions. A consultant might make an intervention during initial or feedback meetings by offering an observation, such as, "Everyone here is talking over one another," or asking, "What is preventing you from dealing with this problem?" or stating, "You are talking over everyone during meetings and not listening to what people are trying to tell you. Are you aware of that?" Of course, in addition to making what might be considered micro interventions, the consultant's job throughout the process is to guide the client toward making a macro intervention that addresses the root cause of the problem. Classification as diagnostic or confrontive. Interventions vary in terms of their level, scope, duration, and strategy. The Leadership Academy vignette focused on individual leaders, but it affected the leaders' direct reports, groups, organizations, and the wider state public health agency. Shine, in 1988, classified interventions as either diagnostic or confrontive in terms of their timing and level of difficulty. Interventions that occur at any time during the contracting process, initial meetings, and data collection are diagnostic interventions because they occur as the organization grapples with the correct diagnosis and intervention strategy. As has been pointed out, the consultant is an intervention. Every decision to observe something, to ask a question, or to meet with someone constitutes an intervention into the ongoing organizational process. Credit Shine, 1988, page 141. Interventions made based on data collection and analysis are confrontive interventions. There are four types of confrontive interventions that range in their level of difficulty. Number one, agenda-managed interventions. As the name indicates, agenda-managed interventions are concerned with helping the group or organization prioritize what to focus on. These interventions also examine its internal processes. Groups or organizations may get stuck determining what is important. They may do nothing or vacillate instead of making a decision. Working with a stalled group or organization can be quite frustrating. Helping a group focus on how it functions can be pivotal in improving actions and outcomes. Shine argued that something as simple as evaluating meetings significantly affects group members' awareness of interpersonal dynamics, emotional reactions, communications, and decision-making processes. Shine recommended starting with low-risk issues like the agenda. Higher-risk issues regarding the group's relational and interpersonal patterns should be tackled once people are emotionally prepared to deal with the vulnerability and feelings that will surface when the group begins to critique how it functions. Number 2, confronting through feedback of observations or other data. Chapter 4 discussed the process of sharing feedback with the client during the discovery phase of the action research model. Shine recommended sharing feedback when the group or organization commits to examining interpersonal workings. Confronting through feedback requires that the client be ready to hear and act on it. Consultants play a key role in helping the client absorb and act on feedback. The ability to observe reactions, listen, ask great questions, facilitate learning, diffuse defensiveness, and deliver difficult messages with tact and diplomacy are key to these types of interventions. Consultants should also model how to hear and accept feedback for the client. This involves asking for feedback on one's own performance and graciously accepting and acting on it as appropriate. Number 3, coaching. When individuals and groups receive feedback, there is a natural inclination to seek help in modifying behavior to facilitate the change process. Coaching has become a significant management trend in recent years. Credit Feldman and Lankow, 2005. It involves helping people overcome behaviors that limit their ability to work effectively with others and understanding what drives behavior. Credit Corbett, Ho, and Coleman, 2009. Corbett and Chlupek, 2019. Coaching is a higher-risk confrontive intervention than agenda-managed interventions or confronting through feedback of observations or other data, making it one that Shine recommended using with caution. Coaching interventions can have life-altering effects and should therefore be used with care and sensitivity. The most effective coaching programs follow a defined process and support people in shifting thought and behavior in ways that affect business positively. Credit Corbett and Coleman, 2005, Corbett and Ho, 2012. Number 4, structural interventions. The confrontive interventions in this section are arranged in a descending hierarchy. That is, they are presented from ease of implementation, 1, to difficulty of execution, 4. Structural interventions pertain to allocation of work, modification of communications, group membership, assignment of responsibility, and lines of authority. These types of changes, which are often called reorganization, are greeted with trepidation by most organization members. They are also the most difficult to implement and sustain and must be undertaken for the right reasons. Before resorting to restructuring, consultants should consider interventions 1 through 3 to see if they sufficiently solve the problem. Interventions are diverse and can address multiple levels of the organization. Selecting the best possible intervention based on your time frame, budget, culture, and goals is a key task of the action research process. Classification by level and process. Other theorists use a range of schemes for classifying OD interventions. McLean, 2006, for example, classified by levels of analysis: individual, group, team, organization, etc. Cummings and Worley, 2018, organized interventions according to the underlying process: human process interventions, techno-structural interventions, human resource management interventions, and strategic change interventions. Table 5.4 in your ebook goes into more detail on different ways to classify OD interventions. Although classification helps the OD consultant and client understand an intervention's scope and focus, no one classification is necessarily right, because both levels and processes are fluid. Leadership interventions, for example, commonly fall under more than one classification. A leadership development program, like the one described in the Leadership Academy vignette, crosses the classifications of individual, team, organization, human process, human resource, and strategic, because potential leaders receive individual development that affects their interactions with groups and influences the overall organization and future strategies. Another example of an intervention that crosses all levels would be the implementation of a performance management system. Individual behavior is usually affected when performance is appraised, and this, in turn, influences groups and the organization itself. Tips and wisdom. French and Bell's OD interventions. As Table 5.4 showed, there are many types of interventions to choose from, particularly based on level. French and Bell, 1999, classified OD interventions into 14 types that center more on the activities. Number 1, diagnostic activities, such as data collection and feedback to determine causes of problems. Number 2, team-building activities, such as determining ground rules or assessing individual interaction styles. Number 3, intergroup activities, such as inter-office collaboration or conflict resolution. Number 4, survey feedback, such as climate assessment. Number 5, education and training, such as a leadership workshop. Number 6, techno-structural or structural activities, such as technology implementation or reorganization. Number 7, process consultation, such as group dynamics analysis. Number 8, grid organization development, such as determining management style based on levels of concern for people and concern for production, based on Blake and Mouton, 1964. Number 9, third-party peacemaking activities, such as mediation. Number 10, coaching and counseling activities, such as executive coaching. Number 11, life and career planning activities, such as career development or life coaching. Number 12, planning and goal setting activities, such as departmental goal setting. Number 13, strategic management activities, such as strategic planning. And number 14, organizational transformation activities, such as restructuring and new leadership. The Leadership Academy vignette interventions could be classified according to French and Bell's 1999 list as 1, 2, 5, 10, 11, 12, and likely others. This book's OD intervention classification. Regardless of classification, each phase of action research builds toward making one or more interventions. This book uses three levels of intervention classification: individual, group or team, and organization. Each of the categories listed previously can be accounted for under one or more of these three categories. Table 5.5 in your ebook lists typical interventions at these levels. We will further describe these interventions in Chapter 7 and 8. End of Chapter 5, Part A.